All right. yeah. My whole talk just flew out of my head. That's all right. I'll find it again. It'll fly back in. So some of you who attend here regularly know that I was away last weekend, and I was attending a Service Space retreat. And Service Space is an organization that I volunteer with outside of the church that inspires me greatly, and I bring that inspiration back here. It's founded by a man named Nipun Mehta, who has this very large organization called Service Space that is global, and they have, I don't know, 500,000, 700,000 members, something like that. And they bring some of the key players in once a year to do a retreat. Now, I've been invited before as a key player. This time I was invited because my rabbit chewed a hole in my shirt. My rabbit, Bigfoot, who has really, we should have named him Big Teeth because he's very active in terms of chewing. I had a Service Space t-shirt and he chewed a hole in it, and I emailed Nipun and said, you know, can I get another Service Space t-shirt? And he said, why don't you come up and get it yourself? Come to our retreat. So you see how things happen? You see how things happen? It's a miracle. So anyway, I got to attend this retreat with all of these people that are doing great work in the world. There was an astrophysicist there and somebody from the Baha'i faith who's a college professor, and there was a person who drafted the Iraqi constitution, and somebody else who was working in government in Costa Rica, and people doing quieter things. Somebody was putting kindness videos in the subway, in the tube in London. And I was there with a chewed up shirt, but I was there and I felt so comfortable sitting at that table because of all of you, because of all of you, because the work that we are doing here in this center is wonderful. It is great. And right now I want to dispel this rumor that I've been hearing that I'm going to run off with Nipun and work in Service Space. I am not. That's not what Service Space is about. Service Space is empowering all of us to ripple all of these effects outwards into the world, to ripple kindness into the world, to ripple goodness, to ripple generosity, to ripple grace. So that's what we're doing with Service Space. That's what I'm doing with Service Space. I am here. And I just turned 60 yesterday. I think I got another 10 years left in me. So there you go. One of the things that organizations like Service Space and like this church encourage us to do is exactly to choose something like a star. I'm going to tell you a little bit what I think that means. When I was up there in Marin, the sky was so beautiful because there was not a lot of light, you know, a lot of ambient light, so you could see the stars really, really closely. And the astrophysicist brought his telescope, and we looked at it, and he pointed, he knew right where to point it, and I looked in, and there was this little planet with rings around it, and it was Saturn. It looked fake. It looked fake. Like, seriously, did you not just paint that on the glass there? But anyway, I was chatting with several people about stars, about how when we look at a star is so far away, particularly, you know, if we're looking at it through a telescope or through the Hubble telescope, that it can take billions of years for that light to reach us. The closer stars take a matter of minutes or days, but the faraway stars are already different. We are looking at the star as it was billions of years ago. Is that not incredible? It's amazing. So when you choose something like a star, you are choosing something that is vast and unknowable and wild and beyond what our human imaginations can imagine. And yet, at the same time, it is strangely infinite and intimate as well. How about that? Intimate and infinite. How do we sort that out? One of the best quotes that I've heard about what I think it means to choose something like a star is from Howard Thurman, and I'm going to paraphrase because my notes are way over there and I don't want to walk over there. Howard Thurman wrote, "Do not ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and do that. Because the world is in need of people who come alive." So this morning, we are asking ourselves what makes us come alive. We are asking ourselves what makes ourselves come alive, and then making a commitment to follow those principles that rise up within us and want us to express our good and our light in the world. You know why I know this is true? Why that statement is true? Why choose something like a star is true? Because one day, three mystics walked into a bar. Mother Teresa, Rumi, and Joni Mitchell. And they were having a three-way conversation. Perhaps it was a thruple. Do you know what thruple is? Sorry, my nephews are in town. We were all singing with the choir. My nephews always tell me the latest words. A thruple is like a couple, but with three people. Now, let's call it a mystical thruple, okay? Just so we don't go to a dark place. But anyway, they're having this conversation, and Mother Teresa says, "You are a drop in the ocean, and the ocean would not be the same without you." Rumi chimes in, and he says, "Ah, you are not a drop in the ocean. You are the entire ocean in a drop." Uh-huh. And then Joni Mitchell says, "Wait a minute. I thought we were stardust. We are golden, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden." So the three of them, maybe it was perhaps a law of three scenario, affirming, denying, reconciling, they reconciled with this. Not only are we a drop in the ocean, but we are also the ocean in the drop. And not only are we the dust in a star, but we are the star in a dust. You got that? You know what that means to all of you? Shell. Shell's over there shaking his head. I don't know what it means. It means that you are stars, and your job is to shine. Your job is to shine your light. Your job is to choose something like a star. Your job is to choose to shine. And that means showing up on purpose and honoring your highest aspirations, the things that make you come alive, honoring that. The world is confusing. It seems even more confusing to me now than it was back in the days of covered wagons when I was born, because I just turned 60. I think something that has long been suppressed, in particular in our society, in our busyness, in our frenzy, and our desire to get it right, is joy. And some people don't even know what makes them come alive. And I would suggest that you look and see what brings you the greatest joy. One of my good friends that I hike with, who is an avid surfer, quotes a surfer whose name I cannot remember right now, but he said, this surfer says, if you're looking at a bunch of surfers, the one out there who is the most successful surfer is the one who is having the best time. You get that? What if that is a new measure of success for all of us, that we're in joy? And that there are all kinds of joy. I'm talking about joy that is that is heartfelt, joy that is reverent, joy that is irreverent, joy that is bawdy, joy that is rowdy, joy that is quiet, joy that is simple, joy that is complex. It's possible that it's all joy, and that we have a right to experience joy. Not only do we have a right, but Pablo Neruda says we have a duty to express our joy, and that we do that through singing our unique song. So take a moment and think about an area in your life where you have been neglecting your joy, and make a commitment to honor that from this day forward. Honor your joy. So if we're in joy, it means that we're in our purpose. But what about all those times when we're in our purpose, or we suspect that we might be in our purpose, but we're terribly afraid? We are very, very afraid. Has anybody gotten a great idea that they know is purposeful, that they know is their highest aspiration, and been terrified of it? Anybody? Raise your hands. Anybody? Yeah. So it's like my whole life. You know, I didn't want to get a dog. I didn't want to run a church. I didn't want to go to India. I was afraid of all of those things. Didn't want to do them. And, well, hello. Here I am. So, you know, often fear is not an indication that you are not on purpose. Fear is just a call to wake up. Fear is a way of saying, this is really important to me, or I wouldn't be so fearful. I remember one of the first things I learned when I went to music school, the guidance counselors actually told us this, and they were all sitting in a room, and we were all terrified because we were freshman music students, and they said, you are afraid because this is very, very important to you. Fear can be a barometer of importance, and you still have to deal with it. You know, I think what happens with fear is that we give it way too much power. We give it way too much power by letting it stop us, but we also give it too much power by trying to push it away, right? If we try and push fear away, that affirms that that fear is so powerful that it can overtake us. So instead, why don't we befriend our fear? How many of our practitioners here that we're celebrating today had moments of fear on the journey from becoming a normal person to becoming a practitioner? Just raise your hands. Oh, so quite a few. Oh, wow, that's shocking. Okay. Give me back that stole, Doreen. No, I'm kidding. So, no, and they all had their hands up, and I'm not making anybody give back their stole because it's so normal and it's so beautiful to be able to acknowledge fear, and it's even better to be able to acknowledge the fear when we are in it and not let it overtake us and not give it too much power. We acknowledge it and we befriend it. We befriend it by saying, this is not my enemy, this is my counselor that feelingly reminds me what I am. Sweet are the uses of adversity. Thank you, Shakespeare and Hugh. So we befriend fear, and you know what happens with that? Is that pretty soon, fear and joy become one. You start to recognize that when you are in fear, something really important is at stake, and there's this little undercurrent of joy that is bubbling underneath your fear, and then you get skilled and more skilled and more skilled at working with it, so that you can step forward into shining your light in an even greater way. The third thing that I want us to acknowledge today is to take a moment to recognize when you really are in alignment with your true purpose, and to recognize that your true purpose is greater than a job description. When I was up in Marin last week, I had this moment of alignment. I had stepped into the meditation room, and this man that I'm friends with, his name is Birju, he's Indian, and he came up to me and he said, what is going on with you? You look really strange. And I said, I'm so happy. I just came alive. And what had happened was they do a community night for, it's not that big, it's about 80 to 100 people, but they invite people that are, for lack of a better word, intimidating. There's like people that have done a lot in the world and famous authors and whatnot. So there's a lot of pressure on the service-based volunteers to do something really special for them. And Nipun had asked me and somebody else, a young man from Spain named Josera, to MC it. And that was fine. But when I was talking with Nipun and Josera about the actual act of putting it together, of putting all the puzzle pieces together, all of us, I could see the tension in Nipun's face of the 200 things he had to do. And all of a sudden, I just knew. I said, Nipun, I got this. I can take this from you. This is what I do every week. This is what I do in a big way at Christmas. This is what I do every time we have an event. Just give it to me. And he gave it to me so willingly, and I felt like it was a chiropractic alignment of grace. I just felt my spine and my energy and everything go into place because I know exactly what is required. I know exactly what is required. I know that you need to take care of the details, and you need to not just pray about it, you need to actually move and talk to people and get the details taken care of. But not only that, you need to hold the anxiety for a lot of people that have stage fright and that are nervous. And then when it's all over, when it's time to go on stage, you have to surrender it all to the great stage manager in the sky and just trust that it will be okay. That's right. You go, girl. Yeah. Now, when I took my high school aptitude test, do you think it said that? You will have to surrender to the great stage manager in the sky. No, it didn't, but it felt so right. It felt so right. So again, I encourage all of you to look for moments in that life, in your life, moments where things come together and you absolutely know that you are shining your light in a way that is unique and wonderful, infinite and intimate to you, because these things will ripple. These things will ripple and bless the entire world. And that's part of it, too, is seeing the ripples. I'm going to tell you a story about rippling. And this is a story that I often tell around September 11th. And I tell it to help us feel less helpless. When tragedies happen, when challenges happen, when the world seems crazy, we can also feel like, it can often feel like we are helpless. and that things are not working out as they should, and that there's nothing that we can do about it. But the truth is that we can do something about it. So this is a story about somebody that I actually don't know, but she's a friend of a friend. And right after September 11th, I happened to be living in the San Fernando Valley at the time, and I was freshly out of New York, and when I was in New York, I was involved in the music business there. So I had a lot of friends still that were involved in that business, and after the towers fell in New York, we were emailing just to make sure that everybody was okay. And we were getting emails back and forth, people checking in each other, and a lot of people were talking about how they were serving and how they were volunteering. And this one woman that I know who is an accompanist, she was making her Carnegie Hall debut with a singer who was making his Carnegie Hall debut. And she said, "I feel so terrible. I feel so terrible. Everybody's helping. Everybody's doing great things. And I have to sit around and practice the piano." And one by one, people responded and they said, "The world needs music at this time. You need to play. You need to sing. We need to bring music to the world." And then there was one response that stood out. And this was a woman who was a registered nurse. And her whole life, from just being a child to the age of 40, she had wanted to sing. She wanted to sing so badly, but she felt like it wasn't practical. And it's not, by the way. And she felt like it wasn't practical, and she felt like she wasn't good enough. But somehow she went to nursing school. This is not about me, by the way. It sounds like me, but it's not about me. She went to nursing school, and she decided to become a nurse. And then in the midst of being a nurse, she decided to start taking voice lessons. And she was spending a lot of time and a lot of money. Voice lessons are really expensive in New York, but she was investing a lot. And it didn't make sense because the repertoire that she liked was the old stuff. You know, the stuff that Julie Andrews would sing, right? Those were the good old days, right? The stuff that Julie Andrews would sing, or what's her face, the one you play for, Shirley Jones. Yeah, Shirley Jones. All of that was what she loved, but she was too old to sing those parts. But she kept on doing it. She kept on doing it without wondering, you know, with wondering what the purpose of it all was. And so it happened that the day 9/11, when the towers fell, that she was working at St. Vincent's Hospital in New York, where they brought a lot of people that had been injured or killed. And she was at work that day, and the ER was just an incredible mess. There were bodies piling up and people coming in all states of tragic disarray and people in pain and people screaming. And there was one woman that was in so much pain, a huge percentage of her body was burned, and she was crying and she was screaming and she was saying, "Please, please, somebody do something about the pain. The pain medicine isn't working. It's not working. Please, somebody do something. Say something. Hold my hand. Can't somebody just sing something?" And there was a hush. An instantaneous hush. And the nurse, the singing nurse, who knew all the wrong repertoire, stepped forward and sang, "When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things. Then I don't feel so bad." And you may ask yourself, what difference does that make? What difference does it make that that nurse followed her dream to become a singer and then shone her light in that ER? What difference does that make? But it made a difference to the woman who was crying. And look how many people are blowing their noses now and wiping their eyes. I've told this story so many times, and it always has the same effect. That one moment, that fragment, is like a star. It happened in the past, and we are seeing it as it happened then, but it is still affecting us. It is still impacting us. It is rippling out to bless the world in magnificent, infinite, and intimate ways. So we choose something like a star. We choose to find what makes us come alive and do that. One of the things I truly hope for all of us, for everyone here today, is that you find what makes you come alive. And I hope for many of you that this spiritual center helps you come alive. Because you are needed here. You are important here. We are doing the work of bringing greater kindness, greater generosity, greater love to the world. We are being love. We are serving love. We are sharing love. We are doing all of those things and so much more, and we are doing it in community. And it's not always pretty. You know, I was thinking, love sometimes smells like sweaty hugs and stuff on the ramp that we don't want to talk about, and but it can also smell like fresh coffee, and love can taste like the cookies that Carol bakes every Sunday, and love can sound like the beautiful choir, and love can look like all of these beautiful faces sitting here in this congregation, sitting here in this circle, sitting here in this circle of life and circle of love that ripples out and blesses the world as we bring these words to our homes, to our families, to our workplaces, to our politicians, to everybody. We are the change that we wish to see the world, and we have to act like it. And how good it is to know, how good it is to know that in all of this, we are supported not only by the universe, by the celestial bodies that shine their light on us. We are supported by our beautiful, blessed, beloved practitioners that shine their light through them to all of us. I'm going to ask the practitioners to stand again, and we're going to applaud for them, okay? Stand up, practitioners. There you go. Please be seated and let us pray.